You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
A happy Monday to you. SEC play begins this week for Arkansas. The Razorbacks go down to Auburn this weekend for a 2:30 game Saturday afternoon at Jordan-Hare Stadium. They announced over the weekend that game's going to be televised by ESPN. Auburn's opened as a 3.5-point favorite this week. That's down to 2.5 points now in some sports books. You know, given the fact that Auburn is the home team, that's basically a toss-up, pick-em-type game. ESPN's football prediction index is a little bit bigger on Auburn. They've got the Tigers predicted to win 58%. They've given them a 58% chance to win the game this weekend. Both teams are 2-1. You look at strength of schedule, they both only played non-conference games. Arkansas is slightly better than Auburn's, but not just a whole lot. And if you base it off last week, there's no surprise that Auburn is, you know, the favorite to win this game. They beat New Mexico. They trotted out a new quarterback, had a pretty easy game down on the plains on Saturday night, won that game by a final score of 45-19. Arkansas had trouble with UAB, as you well know. The Razorbacks win that game by 10. If you go back, it's a little bit of a different story. Maybe like 2 weeks ago, Arkansas played better at Oklahoma State. They took the Cowboys to the mat in Stillwater. Auburn, that same Auburn team, lost at home to California at Jordan-Hare. And I think that really brings me, Ethan, to the two questions that I have about Arkansas's team. And it's basically, who are they and what's their identity? Are they the team that played so well in Stillwater, or are they the team that did not look prepared to play the first quarter against UAB? You know, which game was the exception? Which game was the rule? Those are the questions I think that are going to follow this Arkansas team going into Auburn. We're a quarter of the way through the season. I don't know that we know just a whole lot about the Razorbacks, and I think we'll learn a lot more about them over the next few weeks.
Yeah, and I think that's what's so frustrating about the Razorbacks is that it's just a roller coaster ride right now, and it seems like they either play up to their competition or play down. It wouldn't surprise me to see them go on the road to Auburn and put up a good showing. They seem to perform well on the road. They do well in those environments. But it also didn't surprise me to see them come out flat at home, because we've seen that enough times. I think that right now you want to see a little bit more consistency. It seems the trouble that keep on plaguing them deals with turnovers. And just kind of those self-inflicted things that you wanted to see go away from a week prior against Oklahoma State still had some of those creep back up.
I didn't think Arkansas looked good on either side of the ball against UAB. They had some moments where they looked good offensively. Obviously, the run game was good, and we'll talk about that some. You know, defensively, lots of missed tackles, especially on that first drive for UAB. I heard Sam Pittman talking at halftime of the game. He said that he thought they missed 7 tackles on the first drive alone, and that one only resulted in a field goal, but UAB was able to take a lot of time off the clock. And then offensively, a mixed bag, I think, for Talon Green. Passing was not good. He was good in the running game, which he has been, but I thought you just kind of knew it was going to be a bad day for him based on the first two passes. First, when he has it knocked down at the line of scrimmage, second pass, picked off, returned 40 yards, and that sets up a 15-yard touchdown drive. Arkansas's only points in the first quarter, and they got behind 17-3 on, I think, the first play of the second quarter. That only comes because Monte Harrison recovers an onside kick and returns it inside the 30. Arkansas was able to turn that into a field goal. But, boy, it just was not a good-looking start for them. And I don't know if it was because, you know, maybe they were flat because of what had happened at Oklahoma State. Maybe, you know, they have a week where everybody's telling them how good they are and how good they can be and how much they're going to beat UAB by. But it just was not a good-looking start for a team that I think had hoped that it was going to put these bad starts behind it, because that was really one of the big things that dogged Arkansas last year.
Yeah, and it kind of baffles me why a team that hasn't proven anything yet would go into a game like that, if that was the case, thinking that they just didn't have to show up. I mean, you've only beaten UAPB. You can't go into a UAB game just riding high like you're some championship contender. You gotta take every opponent seriously. I think it's crazy just the start Arkansas got off to. I looked at you, I think, at the end of the first quarter and was like, look, Talon Green's quarterback rating is at negative 40. In the first half, the only receiver who caught a pass was Andrew Armstrong, who continues to play really well. But it's just the offense looked disjointed. I do think it was kind of one of those bizarre things to look at the end and see that Arkansas had, I believe, success on 85% of its drives scoring. So it's like you score, but it's still just there was more left to be desired. I feel like what was so frustrating about it is that they were running the ball so well, and it just kind of felt like just keep feeding Quentin Jackson, and you're just going to find the end zone. And they got Braylon Russell in there for one play for a touchdown. Rodney Hill had some success too. I just feel like anytime they handed off the ball, there seemed to be positive results.
There's a different, and this goes back to what was an issue in Stillwater. There's a difference between scoring on all your possessions and what kind of scores you're getting. And Arkansas is settling too many times for field goals. That was the way in Stillwater, and it was the way the other day against UAB. To Kyle Ramsey's credit, he, you know, got out of his funk a little bit and made three or four kicks, got a 51-yarder that looked like it probably would have been good from 55-plus. But they're still just settling for too many field goals. I mean, you mentioned the 85%, and they gave themselves a chance to score on more than that because really they gave themselves a chance to score on every possession but the first when Green threw an interception. But they only scored about 58% of all the points that were possible to them. That would be a good number in an SEC game, but I feel like in this game against UAB, it was a little bit low.
Exactly, and I think that that's why it's so alarming is this is a team in UAB that if you're settling for field goals against them, what are you going to do whenever you play, you know, an Ole Miss who hasn't given up a touchdown yet? What are you going to do whenever you're in the heart of your schedule against these other teams? I think you got to – and Bobby Petrino, I mean, let's not just negate the fact that he's always thinking touchdown. He hates settling for field goals. It's just they've got to execute. And it's funny because Trent Dilfer, after the game, the UAB head coach, he felt like Bobby Petrino was very – his word was stubborn with the run. And I was like, I'm not sure he was stubborn enough with it. I mean, they ran 59% of the plays, and that includes – you know, some of those scrambles by Taylen Green. You know, Taylen Green looked better in the second half throwing the ball. There's no doubt about that. But the start was alarming. You can't have those type of starts against a Texas, against an Ole Miss, against a, you know, even an Auburn. You can't have that and expect to win.
To Arkansas's credit, they outscored UAB 34-10 after the 14:50 mark of the second quarter. So the last three quarters, I feel like Arkansas played, for the most part, like you should against this type of competition. Again, they settled for field goals too often during those final three quarters. But for the most part, you know, they beat them. I think the way people expected them to beat them, it was a 24.5-point spread coming into the game. Whether or not that's the right point spread or not, you know, that's not really for us to determine. The point spreads are probably going to get a lot more accurate later in the year. We've seen a lot of times this year, and we talked to Aaron Murray about this last week on the podcast. Notre Dame was a big favorite to beat Northern Illinois. Look how that turned out.
Mm-hmm.
What was the spread in Georgia-Kentucky the other night? Like 21?
21 and a half.
I mean, Kentucky very well easily could have won that game. Even OU-Houston, that was a big point spread, and Houston only loses that game by 4 points.
I believe Mississippi State was favored by like 8.5 versus Toledo.
Well, they didn't know what they were talking about. Yeah. I picked Mississippi State to beat Toledo, too, and holy Toledo, what a game. You mentioned the run game. It was awesome, and it made up for a bad day in the passing game. Quentin Jackson, I don't know what there is left to say about him. 147 yards, averaged 9.8 yards per carry. Taylen Green, he ran well. I always like to look at a quarterback's numbers and adjust the yardage for sacks because, you know, when a quarterback gets sacked, say like Green got sacked three times against UAB, so it takes 17 yards off of his rushing total. Those aren't rushing plays. I've never quite understood why we add quarterback sacks to rushing totals. In the NFL, it's taken off of their passing total. But Green, you take away the sacks. He ran for over 100 yards, I think, on 14 attempts. A really good day running the ball for him. I think he's going to be able to have some success against SEC defenses, but I wonder if he's going to be able to keep extending the plays that he's been able to do the last couple of weeks when the athletes get better. And when the tackling gets better, I can't tell you the number of times that I've seen him rolling out to the right and there's somebody nipping at his heels and he gets away from him. You know, you do that against a Harold Perkins, you do that against some of these other SEC defenders that he's going to see, they're going to make that tackle more often than not. And so, you know, I wonder how effective that's going to be moving forward. I think it can have some success, but again, things are about to really pick up and get harder for Arkansas moving down the road.
He's got to be very frustrating for defenders. I mean, you see a lot of times that these players aren't taking bad angles per se. He's just faster than them and gets around the edge. And it's like, yeah, he just nips right by them. And you do wonder, there are so many plays, I feel like, Saturday you can look at and say, wow, Taylen Green just used his athleticism to make something happen. I think about one play that I thought was a for sure sack, and he got it out of there, and it was a big gain to Andrew Armstrong. It actually ended up just being like a 15-yard gain. Mm-hmm. It looked like way more because he was so far behind the line of scrimmage when he got rid of it. You do wonder if that will keep up against SEC teams. You know, against Oklahoma State, who knows how good that defense is. But he played well there, too, for the most part. You know, but the athleticism will turn up a notch starting this week.
We're seeing the accuracy concerns that dogged him at Boise State. We saw it on the last pass he threw against Oklahoma State when he underthrew Rodney Hill on what could have been a touchdown on a wheel route. And certainly you saw it the other day. There were some drops. You looked at the Pro Football Focus stats, which we'll talk about a little bit later. They weren't real high on the routes that Arkansas's receivers were running. But he missed some open throws, too. I can think of at least two, maybe three throws to the end zone where he had a receiver open, and that's at best a touchdown, at worst a first and goal somewhere inside the 5-yard line. And he just overthrew his guy, and those should be walk-in touchdowns, and you got to be able to make those throws.
Yeah, and I think back to what Bobby Petrino said all offseason, that when Taylen Green misses, it's all mechanics. He wants him to use that 6'6 to his credit and get over the top with his throws. I feel like on these missed throws, you look back at him, and it's a lot of time just kind of sidearming it or something, just not really using his physical giftings to his strength. It's not like he's getting set with his feet and just making the throw.
I thought back to the question that I asked Petrino early in camp about Green's completion percentage and whether or not that was a concern to him at all. And he said, no, he never looks at completion percentages. He said, because completion percentages, there are a lot of different things. It could be the receivers. It could be the protection. It's not just all on the quarterback. I do feel, though, like a lot of this 11 for 26 was on Taylen Green the other day.
Yeah, there were a couple drops in there. Maybe those are caught, and he's at around 50%, which still isn't ideal. But, like, yeah, that 42%, I believe it was 42%.
Yeah, I think
that's so. Probably should have been better if the receivers did their job on some plays, but it's still, even if those catches were made, would have been an off performance.
He passed okay against Oklahoma State, certainly started that game real well. I thought he played – I love the drive that he had after Oklahoma State had taken the lead, and he has the long pass to Satania, then he has the long touchdown pass to Haz. I thought that showed me something about him. So I think the verdict is still out on him, just how good he's going to be. But he does have some footwork and some technique stuff that just does not look real polished at times. Sam Pittman was asked after the game on Saturday about Green's performance. He was asked whether the wind, which was whipping around pretty good in the stadium, might have affected his accuracy. Here's what he had to say.
I think he just didn't have a good night. I think Bobby talked to him about his reads and all that. But I thought that, he got the ball out of his hand. On some of the errant throws, he got the ball out of his hand fast. Where he made plays was when he ran around a little bit, But I don't think so. I think if you ask him, I think he just short-armed some throws.
Chris Doering on SEC Network had a great quote about Taylen Green, I thought. He was discussing his play on SEC Network's post-game show Saturday night. And this is what he said. He said, quote, "You know what Taylen Green is like? It's like going to the county fair. The excitement of being on the roller coaster and the thrill of maybe dying because of how they put the roller coaster together. Good things are going to happen. Bad things are going to happen. But the excitement of not knowing which is really the fun."
That is a very great assessment. And I think fans are this is more enjoyable for fans to watch. It's got to be than what happened last year when your quarterback just doesn't even stand a chance. But it is a roller coaster ride. It's kind of, you see the pick six in the first half against Oklahoma State. You see the interception that was just an ill-advised throw.
That easily could have been a pick six,
yeah,
too.
Could have been. He actually, I believe, made the tackle.
I think he did.
It was funny watching how he turned on the wheels to prevent that. But you just, you get what you get with him. You're going to get some of the crazy highlight plays where he makes something happen. He almost had a great throw to Tyrone Broden at Oklahoma State that went through Broden's hands on one of those crazy plays that, you know, other quarterbacks you don't want him throwing that. He can make some crazy good plays, but he also can make just head-scratching throws.
It reminds me a little bit of watching Matt Jones play at Arkansas 20 years ago, and I thought it was kind of interesting or maybe ironic that he was on the field Saturday because he was recognized as part of the UA Hall of Honor. But Matt had the ability to extend plays like few other quarterbacks have ever been able to do. Green can do that. He can extend plays. But sometimes when you extend plays, you also increase the likelihood that you're going to make a mistake or that somebody's going to make a mistake. Maybe a lineman has to drift too far down the field and you get a penalty flag for that. Or maybe, you know, somebody gets held or, you know, I mean, there are all kinds of things that could happen. There are things that could happen defensively. Defensive backs, they have to cover their receivers for longer. Maybe they fall down. Maybe the receiver falls down. Maybe there's a pass interference on one side or the other. Doring is right. You just never really know what you're going to get with Taylen Green.
I will say a really big positive for the Razorbacks, despite his accuracy issues this past weekend, is him and Andrew Armstrong have a great connection. I mean, Armstrong missed the UAPB game, which could have been just a stat stuffing type of game. And he's second in the SEC with 301 receiving yards. I think on one hand, you look at that and it's a real big positive because look at how much Andrew Armstrong has kind of established himself as a top SEC receiver. But on the other hand, you want to see more guys involved.
These are the two best games of Armstrong's career here the last couple of weeks. We mentioned Quentin Jackson has been so good lately. Ethan went to the locker room to talk to Trent Dilfer the other night after the game. They were very stubborn with the run. They wanted Arkansas to pass the ball. Mm-hmm. Arkansas was doing exactly what UAB wanted for about the first probably 15 minutes or so of that game when Arkansas had the ball, because they didn't have the ball just a whole lot. But Jackson was just so good. 9.8 yards per carry. He's leading the SEC in rushing yards right now, almost 400 through three games. He scored 6 touchdowns. And Pittman was asked about his play after the game, and here's what he had to say about Jaquindon Jackson.
Every time we ask him, he does some pretty spectacular things. Our line does a good job, but he is our guy. Again, I don't know, Bob. I just don't feel like he probably never was Utah, and he got injured over there as well. So they probably would have used him a bit as much we if he was healthy.
And to today, what he did that you really liked?
He makes extra yards when he carries the ball. You know, we'll block it up somewhere, but he always seems to be making somebody miss or running over somebody. Got really good vision back there. And like I said, the jump cut, when it was going to the right, the jump cut that he ran for, I don't know, 25 yards, something like that. That was a little bit of line and a whole lot of running back.
What a great line. A whole lot of running back for Quentin Jackson. We've got a lot more to talk about from the Razorbacks game against UAB on Saturday. First, we want to tell you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. We think it's the most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports. We've got an award-winning team of reporters and photographers, and they bring their subscribers the most trusted Razorback news, analysis, latest in recruiting from Richard Davenport, unique stories on all your favorite teams. I spent a lot of time out at Baum Walker Stadium this weekend and wrote a report on what I'm seeing from Razorback baseball. In fact, we're supposed to have Nate Thompson, Arkansas's hitting coach and recruiting coordinator, on the show tomorrow just to talk more about this. It's looking like a much different looking Arkansas team just in terms of how they're practicing. You can read more about that and much more at wholehogsports.com. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the Razorbacks' defense against UAB, and we'll also get in a little bit later in the show into what we saw around the SEC this week. But first, a word from our sponsors.
LPGA Week in Northwest Arkansas returns September 23rd through the 29th for the 18th consecutive year. Watch former Razorbacks and 2024 Olympians Maria Fassi and Gabby Lopez compete against the world's best female golfers at the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship, presented by P&G at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers. The NWA Championship is so much more than a golf tournament, with something for everyone to enjoy and activities for fans of all ages. Daily tickets are only $10, and kids 17 and under get in free with a ticketed adult. Get your tickets today at nwachampionship.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and Shopcart.
Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. It's your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. They're located in Uptown Rogers, and the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Ethan, the defense did not look great against UAB the other day. It was not a normal defensive week for the Razorbacks either. Sam Pittman talked about this after the game. You know, he said during practice there were a lot of players wearing green jerseys just because of how banged up they got throughout the week. I think there were some players that they didn't know, say, like during Tuesday's practice or Wednesday's practice, if they were going to be able to play in the game on Saturday. Travis Williams was out on Tuesday. He wasn't at the practice Tuesday, the defensive coordinator, because he was with his wife as they were delivering their new child. Here's what Pittman had to say after the game about the defense.
Worried, especially defensively, I was worried about how our physicality and how we would fly to the football and all those things, because during practice with a lot of green out there that you can't hit, it slows down. So I think that probably had more to do with it than maybe the Oklahoma State deal. And we were physically beat up from that game and still recovering from it, honestly.
And that was Sam Pittman. He had been asked about the defensive performance and whether or not Oklahoma State, you know, maybe there was a hangover from that game the week before. The tackling is a concern for Arkansas. We mentioned that first drive when they had 7 missed tackles. You wrote this on our website this week. You look through the Pro Football Focus numbers. Arkansas ranks 15th in the SEC out of 16 teams in tackling and 109th nationally. And again, those are against teams with athletes for the most part. Oklahoma State, they've got some players who would play in the SEC. But, you know, UAB, that's really where the tackling concerns came from. I thought Arkansas probably tackled as well as they have all year against Oklahoma State, ironically enough. Those tackling numbers are going to have to improve, and I think those are maybe why people are so concerned about the rest of the season.
Yeah, it's all about discipline in my eyes. It's just being disciplined with the angles they're taking, with wrapping up, and with just finishing a play. And I think that's what was concerning with the first quarter especially. UAB had 73 rushing yards in the first quarter. I mean, you're rushing for that in one quarter, you're on pace for a 350-yard game on the ground. Arkansas, to their credit, they wrapped up better the rest of the game. UAB only had 46 rushing yards the final three quarters, but that first quarter was concerning. They were just rattling off these big runs, and it was running back sometimes dragging Arkansas defenders too. I think that Arkansas, you know, whatever the reason may be, I know Sam Pittman, like we just heard, rattled off a few of those reasons that could have been there, but the physicality I don't think was there early. To their credit, they fixed some things. UAB did not look the same offensively, you know, from I feel like about the middle of the second quarter on. I mean, they had one good drive in the fourth quarter that was aided by face mask penalties for the Razorbacks, which that's a concern too. If you have 3 of those in a game, it seems like it's something that keeps on coming up. But they just got to be more disciplined.
Arkansas, I think defensively, the game against Oklahoma State might have served as a little bit of fool's gold. You know, they held Ollie Gordon in check, and we talked about, you know, just how few teams had been able to do that to him. And then Oklahoma State, they turn around, they go to Tulsa on Saturday, and Ollie Gordon was even worse against TU than he was against Arkansas. He ran for 41 yards on 17 carries in that game Saturday against TU. You know, Pittman talked about after the game the other day that they had 6 preseason practices where they worked on Oklahoma State. They knew they were going to beat UAPB, and so they didn't have to put a lot of focus into UAPB. They put a lot of their focus into Oklahoma State, and they were prepared to play that game. They were prepared to play at the start of that game. Obviously, that was where the majority of their focus was, because that was such a big game for them early in the year. They didn't look prepared to play against UAB. And again, we talked about the reasons that might have been early in the game. but defensively, especially, they just did not look ready for UAB. It was, you know, average defensive grades at best. Some were just downright bad by Pro Football Focus.
I agree, and I think that that's just what's concerning. It seems like Arkansas has a chance to come home and put up a good performance against a team that got beat handily the week before by a ULM team that I believe won two games a year before. So not the best ULM team in the world.
No, they do have a new coach.
They do have a new coach, yeah. But still, that might even be more of a concern. Like, your first year with somebody coming off a 2-10 year, that's a team that shouldn't – that if they beat UAB 32-6, Arkansas has every capability to do the same thing, if not worse. I think that's what's concerning, is you had an opportunity to come home in front of it was a really nice crowd at the start to maybe make a statement. I think that's – you know – you see these teams that have a big game the next week. I know it's a big game for Arkansas starting at Auburn, but you think about Tennessee this past week. I know that was Kent State and UAB aren't even. I know they're both FBS, but those aren't even on the same level. Kent State is so bad. But, I mean, Tennessee had no signs of letting up a week before a big game, and on the heels of a big game the week before against NC State. I think that good teams handle business how they should, and you see that.
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of teams that have done that. Ole Miss has done that all year, and that's another example. Ole Miss and Tennessee, there's so much focus right now on Texas and Alabama and Georgia. I feel a lot of people are looking over Tennessee and Ole Miss, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. Landon Jackson had the strongest PFF score for Arkansas. It was, like an 89.8 or something like that?
Yeah, it was up there.
Yeah, I mean, and it was way better than whoever was at number two. You know, and people will look at that, and they'll say, well, he's been mostly a non-factor. I did see a couple of clips that I'd been tagged in by an evaluator, I think, for the Shrine game. And, you know, he said that he thought Landon Jackson was really good in that game the other day against UAB. But he's been a non-factor in the pass rush, I mean, for the most part. Some of that may be due to the double teams. In fact, it probably is a lot due to the double teams and teams scheming for him. Arkansas only sacked UAB one time. They didn't sack Oklahoma State at all in Stillwater. Brad Spence had the sack the other day on a third and long. He brought a linebacker blitz and made a great play. I just feel like if Arkansas isn't getting a lot of pressure against these teams that they're playing early in the year, how can you expect them to get pressure against the SEC teams when the lines get better? We're just not seeing much of a pass rush at all from Arkansas. Now, I think maybe some of that has to do with the fact they're not bringing a lot of blitzes. We haven't seen a whole lot of blitzes at all this year. It seems to me like they're relying on the front. You know, maybe the front and the linebacker to get pressure on the quarterback, and that may be what's causing some of these big plays in the secondary. I think the defensive backs are probably having to stay, in coverage, maybe a little bit too long, and the plays are breaking down, and they're giving up some of these big pass plays. You have to wonder though if Williams either is he a if they're not bringing a lot of blitzes, maybe he's had them holstered, so is it something where they've tried to maybe. I don't know if vanilla is the right word, but if they tried to withhold some stuff, from the SEC teams that they're going to see down the line, thinking that they're going to be okay, defensively against the UAPBs and the UABs, you don't want to blitz Oklahoma State too much because of that quarterback they have. So is he holding something, or is this part of his strategy that they thought they were going to get more pressure with the defensive front and it's just not working? And so maybe we're going to see something different moving forward. I think regardless, what they're doing right now is not going to work, I don't feel like, in SEC games. And I would suspect that when we see them play Auburn this weekend, they're going to change some of their looks defensively.
I think that those are all reasonable things to maybe guess might be the case for why they're not getting as much pressure. I do think that UAB was a game that their line had shown so much susceptibility to giving up sacks the week before against ULM.
They were leaky.
Yeah, and Sam Pittman, if you hear his comment after the game, he was asked about it, and he did not seem pleased at all from a pass rush standpoint. And I mean, he's not going to – whenever you're one sack, I don't expect him to. But it seemed just the tone like it is a concern for him as well. I do think the game against Oklahoma State, they have such a good offensive line. And, I mean, the defense held their own in that game. Whatever strategy they had, hard to fault them for that. But UAB was a game that I expected to see more pass rush for sure. Just to touch on Landon Jackson again, since you brought him up, I think that he's getting some really illegitimate criticism right now from a lot of people about his play, just because people look for him on immediately like sack numbers and stuff. And if people are coming at you with a double team, that's going to be a lot harder to produce. And you look at what he did do in the game, like you mentioned, the Pro Football Focus grade that was high. He had the most hurries of a quarterback of any player on the team. He had six of those. He deflected the pass at the end that TJ Metcalf intercepted. Mm-hmm. He was all over the place.
You know, his sack numbers last year weren't very high. He had 6.5 sacks last year, and 3.5 of those came against Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And I've often wondered if that one Alabama game might have elevated him to, I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but maybe it caused people to expect too much of him. Because, you know, you had a lot of scouts who may have watched that game, and maybe they didn't watch a whole lot of other Arkansas games. But whenever Alabama plays, you're watching Alabama. He beat up a freshman tackle against Alabama, had a great game last year. But, again, the sack numbers just haven't been real high for him throughout his career, and maybe it's not maybe it's expecting too much of him to have high sack numbers. Yeah.
And I think with a defensive end like him, I mean, if you're going to criticize just from looking at the stats at the end of the game, people should go back and just watch individual plays. And the dude's not getting beat. He's not taking bad angles or getting beat. I mean, he might have one or two plays here and there that you're like, okay, not his best play, but
everybody's going to have those.
Yeah, everybody's going to have those. And I think that people just the criticism right now, because I've seen a lot of it, of people being like, oh, I saw a missing sign with Landon Jackson's face on it. I'm like, I think he's doing a pretty good job.
Well, I mean, to your point, to have six hurries when he's being double-teamed a lot, that probably speaks to why he had such a good grade from Pro Football Focus.
And you'd think that if he's getting double-teamed, I think this is where the concern is, that maybe that should create more opportunities for pressures from other people.
Mm.
And so I think that that's where you're wanting to see some others step up. Brad Spence, that was a huge sack that he had against UAB. It felt like in the moment that might be like
a big play in the game.
Yeah, it was a turning point.
Bottom line, how Arkansas played against UAB, that's not going to win.
No.
It's not going to win in the SEC. It's not going to win very many other games. I think Arkansas's got the potential. They've got the capability to beat Auburn. I think they've got the capability to beat Mississippi State. Obviously Mississippi State, A&M. Maybe LSU. I mean, LSU's real inconsistent. Maybe they can pick off one of these other teams that they play, you know, who's really good, but they're not going to do that playing the way they did against UAB. They play the way they did against Oklahoma State, maybe they can, but they're not going to have, you know, six extra practices to prepare for these teams moving down the line. I feel like the next 3 weeks are going to tell us a lot. They play Auburn. I think it's a winnable game. Whether or not they do, we'll see. A&M, you know, I think that's winnable too in Arlington. Tennessee is a whole different ball game because those guys look so good right now. But,
and they'll be coming off a bye week.
And they will be coming off a bye week after probably about a 40-point win in Norman. But how they play in these games, you know, I think they need to win either Auburn or A&M to make people feel good. Maybe not even good, but make people feel like there's still a chance for something to happen toward the end of the season. They really need to beat both of them if they're going to get to a bowl game, because you start to look down the line. Are they going to beat Texas? Are they going to beat Ole Miss? Are they going to beat Missouri? Don't think they're going to beat Tennessee. You got to start winning some of these games if you're going to be a bowl team, because the schedule gets a lot harder as you go down the line. And then Tennessee, you know, that game's going to be what it is. Maybe they can pick them off. I don't know. Maybe Tennessee's sloppy coming off a bye. But you at least want to see Arkansas compete in that game. And I just don't feel like the type of, you know, I don't know if effort's the right word, but the overall product that they showed Saturday, that's not going to compete with Tennessee in any way whatsoever.
I think that it's so important looking at a team where their bye week falls, and you mentioned these big games coming up. If Arkansas rolls into that bye week, which let's just point out, they've been really good under Sam Pittman after a bye week in the next game, and they get LSU on the other side. If you enter that bye week with a winning record, which would require beating both
A&M and Auburn.
Or Tennessee somehow. But if you go in at, like, you know, a 4-2, even 3-3 isn't the end of the world. But if you go in not with a losing record, I think that the team can come out on the other half of its schedule. I mean, they weren't good in October, November last year. But they were in that year that Sam Pittman had his winningest year at Arkansas. I think that you could go into that bye week with some serious momentum if you are able to pull off a couple wins. I think that Auburn, you look at them on paper, Arkansas it's how I felt with Oklahoma State, maybe even more to an extent, that I think Arkansas's got the better team. It's just, can you take care of business? And A&M, they've shown their faults. I think that those two games are right now, feel like, if not both of them must wins, you got to at least win one.
All I heard you say was Arkansas was going to beat Texas coming off a bye week.
I said LSU, right?
We will tell you that Jordan Weaver is coming to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club at noon on Wednesday, that's September 18th, at Home 2 Suites in Springdale. You can reserve your seat now at OzarksTix.com, OzarksTix.com. Jordan Weaver, the Razorback gymnastics coach, former gold medalist, gold medal gymnast for Team USA in 2012. Hunter Juracek will be at our sports club next Wednesday, September 25th. Again, you can find more information on these speakers and more going throughout the fall at OzarksTix.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about Ethan's SEC power rankings after the weekend. It was a really interesting weekend in the conference. We'll have more on that, but first, another word from our sponsors.
Taste, sip, sample, and discover the very best restaurants and chefs Northwest Arkansas has to offer at the Bite Experience at the LPGA, a unique culinary experience on site at the Northwest Arkansas Championship. Tickets are available Friday, September 27th through Sunday, September 29th, offering access to the best golf viewing and food and beverage samples from over 30 local restaurants. You don't want to miss this. Tickets are available for $45 a day. Get yours before they sell out at BiteNWA.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass. For all your glass market needs and the highest quality products, you can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Interesting weekend across the SEC. We'll talk about some of the more notable games in just a minute. But first, I want to touch on Auburn, because they did beat New Mexico 45-19 the other night. And they started a new quarterback. Hank Brown is a freshman quarterback for the Tigers. There's actually a Trent Dilfer connection here. Hank Brown played for Trent Dilfer in high school at Lipscomb Academy in Nashville. So you got Trent Dilfer connections last week. You got one this week. He had a good game against New Mexico, threw for four touchdowns and no interceptions. That was after Peyton Thorne threw for four interceptions against Cal and had Auburn bettors sending him, you know, messages on Venmo asking if he would give their losses back. The expectation is Brown's going to be the quarterback against Arkansas. Maybe not. I mean, we don't know why Thorne didn't play, but again, the expectation, I would think, after he played the way he did and Thorne played the way he did against Cal, that Brown's going to be the quarterback, and maybe that's a good opportunity for the Arkansas defense this week, playing a quarterback who's never played against this type of defense. Regardless of what you think about Arkansas, their defense has got better athletes, and they're going to be quicker across the field than whatever he saw against New Mexico.
That's a great point. And I don't, whenever I look at Auburn's offensive line, I don't see one that the Razorbacks, you know, we're talking about, can they start getting some pressure on the quarterback? It's not like Auburn has a world beater offensive line. I think that's a team that if you have been a little bit vanilla with your rushes and your blitzes, that maybe against a freshman quarterback, you just go ahead and see if he can handle it. He did have an impressive game against New Mexico. Take that however you want. But I mean, end of the day, Auburn is, they have a situation on their hands where they're having to go to a freshman quarterback because they don't trust Peyton Thorne. At least that's what it appears.
Brown's a redshirt freshman quarterback. I don't know how much of a difference that makes. So,
did he take any snaps last year?
That's a good question. I will look that up and tell you if he did. Well, here you go. He played in the Music City Bowl against Maryland, went 7-for-9 for 132 yards. That was his only game.
Good experience, more than Arkansas's redshirt freshman quarterback had going into this year.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But
it's a totally different game when you're playing in an SEC game, I feel like, then in a bowl game. Georgia had a close call over the weekend against Kentucky, only won that game 13-12. The Bulldogs scored their go-ahead points in the fourth quarter. They hadn't scored a touchdown the entire game until then. In fact, that was the only touchdown that was scored in that game between Georgia and Kentucky. Because they struggled, AP voters felt better about Texas and their 56-7 win over Texas San Antonio. So Texas is new number one in the AP poll, first time since 2008. The Longhorns have held the number one spot. Georgia's number two now. It's still SEC. You got six of the top seven teams. It still feels like a very top-heavy league. I'm not sure I'm sold on Missouri, but the other five teams that I think are at their top or at the top, I think those are all legitimate national championship contenders.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I think that you look at the SEC right now and you can kind of draw a line after Missouri. As far as right now, I'm including in this category Missouri, Ole Miss, Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, Texas. And those look like the college football playoff.
Those are your top six.
Those are my top six. And those are the ones, Oklahoma. That's where I'm drawing the line right now as far as what looks like a playoff contender. You know, Oklahoma can change that narrative if they come out with a win against Tennessee, which
they're going to get smashed.
I read today that this is the first time since I think 1998. I hope I'm getting the year right. That Oklahoma's more than a touchdown underdog at home going into a game.
I just think they're going to get smashed.
Yeah, I don't think Josh Heupel has much. I don't think the mercy is really going to be on his platter.
I just don't
know
how good OU is.
Yeah.
You know, we talked with Barry Trammell about this last week, the columnist for the Tulsa World. And, you know, I mean, that was kind of his assessment. He said, I just don't know that OU is a very good team. They got quarterback problems. They've got problems at a lot of different positions, you know, across the field. Tennessee doesn't look like they got problems. You know, I know that they haven't really played just a whole lot of teams. They played some FCS team in the first week and won 69-3. They beat North Carolina State 51-10. That may be the most impressive win this year. I know Texas went to Michigan and won. I know that
Georgia
beat Clemson.
Clemson was very impressive.
Those are impressive wins. But man, North Carolina State was supposed to have a pretty good defense this year, I think.
Yeah.
Tennessee just went through them like it was nothing. And then they play Kent State the other night. And Kent State, again, I take competition into consideration when I'm talking about some of this. Kent State had lost to an FCS team the week before. But Tennessee's beat them 65-0 at halftime. They scored 37 points in the first quarter. No Tennessee team has ever done that. I don't care who you're playing. Arkansas was playing UAPB in game one, and they were up 49-0 at halftime, and it looked like the most perfect first half I've ever seen from a football team until you see what Tennessee did against Kent State, and they're winning this game 65-0 at halftime against an FBS team, not an FCS team. They look like a steam engine going downhill on a railroad track.
Yeah, I was about to point out the UAPB game. I mean, if you're looking at that and thinking of how much Arkansas dominated that game, subtract 5 points from Arkansas's final score against UAPB, and that was the halftime score with Tennessee-Kent State. That is just wild to me. I think that that's a really good team. Their defense is what's been impressive so far this year. I mean, the offense, you kind of knew it would have potential to be good, but that defense showed against NC State how good it can be.
I think I read that Kent State declined an opportunity to have a running clock in the second half of that game. So Tennessee, you know, they took it easy. They only scored a couple of field goals after halftime. They end up winning that game 71-0. This is, for them, I think they have outscored their three opponents by 181 points this year. It's just incredible. And there's so much talk about the defense or about the offense, but I think their defense is really good. I think their defensive front is really, really good. Tim Banks, their defensive coordinator, has them playing as well as we've seen under Josh Heupel. Competition will improve, I know that, but you can't help but be impressed by what Tennessee's done the first few weeks. It looks like they just got athletes all over the field. Georgia against Kentucky kind of felt a little bit, I mean, obviously it's a conference game, but it kind of felt a little bit like it could have been what we saw Arkansas-UAB. You hear all week, hey, you're going to beat this team. Look at what they did last week. You're going to beat this team. I think there are times that a team just feels like they can show up and win. And, you know, when you're told all week about how good you are or how good you can be or how much you can beat a team, I really think that it affects your preparation for the game. And I've heard coaches say before, you know, that there's usually about three games a year where you are at peak intensity, ready for the game. About six times a year, you know, you're probably at a suitable level. Three times a year, you're going to have trouble getting up for a game, and you're going to have to go out and really slug your way through one and win the game. And I think that's probably what you saw from Arkansas. That was probably one of their three of the year against UAB. For Georgia, you know, assuming that they get three a year, that was one of them against Kentucky.
Yeah, and I think that if you're Kirby Smart in Georgia, it might have been a blessing in disguise. I mean, you got to win. That's the most important thing, is your win-loss record at the end of the year doesn't care how it was done. It just cares that there's a win there. I think he's probably pretty happy they're not number one anymore. Maybe snap a little bit of intensity into his team, especially with they have a bye week now and Alabama on the other side. If Georgia doesn't come out ready for that game and look like a different team than the one at Kentucky, they're going to get beat. But I don't think that's going to be the case.
If Georgia beats Alabama, which I would suspect Georgia beats this Alabama team. I don't know that, but I would suspect they would. You're looking at mid-October, probably two undefeated teams ranked 1 and 2 when Georgia goes to Texas. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very possible outcome. Missouri got tested by Boston College. That was my upset pick of the weekend. I thought Boston College might pull it off when they got up 14-3 in that game, and then Missouri really settled things down. I still just don't know a whole lot about Missouri. I think that maybe we saw a little bit of the fact that they hadn't tested themselves the first 2 weeks, probably showed up early against Boston College, then they were able to settle in, and they came back and closed that game out, won by 6 points. You know, Boston College, I was impressed, and I guess I still am a little bit by their win at Florida State, but it's looking not as impressive by the week because of the way the Seminoles are playing. They just lost to Memphis over the weekend. I said this the other day. Give me Bill O'Brien over Eli Drinkwitz. I think O'Brien is an outstanding coach. If he had that Missouri roster, you know, what could they do? Missouri's fine. You know, they're winning right now. I think they're going to – and I know they don't have the schedule, but I just get the feeling with Missouri, they're going to get picked off somewhere a week where you don't see it coming.
I think it's funny, the Florida State win, going back on Boston College, how they tested Mizzou. The Florida State win right now is like a perception thing, because you beat Florida State, you're ranked the next week. You look at Georgia Tech happened to them, Boston College happened to them, and Memphis happened to them. I believe Memphis might have already been ranked, but I can't remember.
No, they were not.
They were not, but they entered the poll. So I don't think that Boston College is as good as maybe the perception after the Florida State game, because I think Florida State's maybe just not great, but Missouri...
I still think they're a tough team.
I still think they're BC. A tough team, and that Missouri beat them by 6, though. I'm not sold on Missouri either. You know, I included Missouri when I said the 6 teams that are kind of like playoff contenders in my head, and that's more because Missouri's schedule, you look at it, and it's cupcake party. I mean, this is a third-grade girl's birthday party. How many cupcakes there are on there. But it is... The Boston College game didn't prove to me anything. I think if you're a team like Arkansas that is, you know, perceived right now near the bottom of the league, you can look all the way up to Missouri kind of in the SEC pecking order and nobody's proven anything. And you're like, you can ascend pretty high just based on what we've seen from other teams. Nobody's really proven much aside from a few teams that have those quality wins.
Yeah, these teams like South Carolina, who took LSU to the limit the other day, like they would have a puncher's chance against the Missouri this year. That would
A&M in Missouri Kentucky. Play in a few weeks, and I think A&M could very well beat them.
Missouri plays Vanderbilt this weekend.
Commodores enjoy their 2-0 start.
And it just I was kind of excited for Vanderbilt. It's like they're going to be 3-0. They're going to be and then they go and they lay an egg against Georgia State. And I said this the other day, this is one of those weird road games where it just feels like it's not going to be as easy as people expect it to be. And I thought Vanderbilt was going to get out of there with the win, and then they allowed Georgia State to go down the field in like a minute and score the go-ahead touchdown with, what, like 75 seconds left in the game?
Yeah, it was – Vandy took the lead with 75 seconds, then Georgia State took it with like 15 seconds left. And it's funny because last week we actually brought this up. Feelings from some people about me putting Vandy over Arkansas, and I said enjoy, just give it to Vandy and let them enjoy it while it lasts. I'm sure they'll be Vandy at some point. I didn't think it would be this soon. I think they're right back to the Vandy we all know and love.
And then Mississippi State, I thought they had maybe turned a little bit of a corner under Jeff Lebby. You know, they got behind big against Arizona State. They came back and they made that a close game. But my gosh, they looked terrible against Toledo the other night. I think they got behind 35-3 in that game. They ended up losing 41-17 in front of all the cowbells. Did you know, somebody tweeted this week, I can't remember who it was, Toledo in the last 10 years has a 2-1 record against SEC teams because they beat Arkansas at War Memorial.
16-12.
Now, granted, you know, the teams that they are playing are way different, but Ohio State is 0-3 against the SEC during that same time.
Yeah, I'm about to say, who are the three against? Who is Toledo's loss to?
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, that was a game that I think kind of put the writing on the wall for this season with Mississippi State, that it's going to be it could be a long season. They couldn't get off the field on defense against Toledo. So whenever they go through their schedule, how are they going to get off the field against, you know, I'm blanking on who all is even on their schedule this year in SEC play, but surely there's plenty of them that are going to give them trouble. I will give myself some credit. You can look it at wholehogsports.com.
Yeah, you picked Toledo.
I picked Toledo.
Don't know why you did, but you did.
Oh, I know why I did, because 41-17. That's why, but anyway, it was kind of an out there pick. It was my, can I create some separation? I'm in the lead. I will brag on that.
What's the best game this week, SEC-wise? We know it's Georgia-Alabama next week.
Oh, it's definitely Oklahoma-Tennessee. That's not even close. And then I will say, not a good game, but I'm intrigued. I am very intrigued by Mississippi State-Florida. Terrible game. The more intriguing thing is what's going on with Billy Napier. Florida's favored. I mean, enjoy it while it lasts, because I'm not sure that's happening much more this year. Elsewhere, I honestly think Arkansas-Auburn might be the game in the conference that you look at is the most intriguing, aside from
maybe the most competitive.
Yeah, maybe the most competitive. You also have the Mizzou-Vandy. It's just whenever you have Mizzou-Vandy, Mississippi State-Florida, and Arkansas-Auburn as your next best options after the game of the week, which nationally is Oklahoma-Tennessee, it's just not a great lineup across the conference.
It's taken a long time for us to stair-step our way to the better SEC games. I feel like there's usually a better slate of games in September than there are this year. A ton of FCS games this year, more than I can remember early in the season than ever before in the SEC. We're going to get there to better games. It's just going to take a little bit longer. Tennessee-OU, I don't know how good that's going to be. Alabama, Georgia. Don't know how good that's going to be, but there will certainly be a lot of buzz leading up to that game.
UCLA is not good. I mean, I think they just got thrashed by Indiana.
They go to LSU.
They go to LSU. That'll be interesting just to see if LSU can kind of put it on a team that's from a power conference, but that's not a good game either.
LSU, real quick, run through these other games. LSU beat South Carolina. Gamecock fans were concerned or mad, not concerned, probably not the right word.
Yeah.
They were mad about the officiating, but they looked like the right calls in the moment.
Yeah, well, you know that Gamecock fans are mad whenever they're resurfacing Will Muschamp videos saying like, oh, Will was right. He said something about like the SEC where it just means more if you're a select few teams, basically. You know that they're really mad if they're making Muschamp out to be their savior.
It felt like LSU was going to, I watched most of that game, it felt like LSU was going to win that game, but man, you get to a certain point and you just have so many empty, you know, you're throwing picks in the red zone. At some point it feels like they're not going to be able to overcome everything that they're doing, and they were able to overcome, you know, some of the things that happened in that game. Rocket Sanders had a nice game, by the way. 66-yard touchdown after LSU had taken the lead was a big play in the game.
And I think it's definitely, you have to talk about this game, the fact that that South Carolina lost its starting quarterback for the second half, Lenore Sellers. They looked really good in the first half. I think that that's the type of game that if you're Arkansas and you see LSU go into South Carolina and South Carolina can have that success on offense. I don't think South Carolina has a better running game with Rocket Sanders than Arkansas has with Jaquan and Jackson. And I give Taylen Green, for all the, you know, warts and freckles you have there with his performances, he's a better quarterback than Lenore Sellers, I think, from what I've seen so far this year. I think Arkansas, that's a game like that that gives you confidence that coming off a bye week, you can beat an LSU.
If you get Taylen Green when he's good, I think he's a better quarterback than either of the two teams they're going to face the next 2 weeks. I don't think Connor Wigman is a good fit in the Colin Klein offense, but he's injured now, and Marcel Reed came in and led him to a win in Gainesville. So maybe Reed is their quarterback moving forward, but you know, he had a pretty good game, I think, in the bowl game last year against Oklahoma State. But, you know, if you get Green when he's good, I think Arkansas's got the advantage at quarterback the next 2 weeks. If he's not good, then it feels like all bets are
off.
That's
the big if. It's just which Taylen Green are you going to get? And I honestly think that we can go into a lot of these Arkansas games this year, and that is, like, the number one, like, which Taylen Green are you going to get? If he plays like he did at Oklahoma State and maybe – and avoid, you know, a pick six – you're gonna have a fighter's chance in a lot of these games.
We got a lot more Arkansas-Auburn to talk about throughout the week, both here on our podcast and on our website, wholehogsports.com. Again, Nate Thompson, the Arkansas baseball recruiting coordinator and hitting coach, is supposed to be with us tomorrow to talk about Razorback baseball practice. Really fascinating, the difference in how this team looks in terms of, you know, not so much physically, but just the style of play that we're seeing right now over at Baumwalker Stadium. We get to talk to Nate tomorrow. Looking forward to that. Hope you'll visit us at our website. Until then, and we'll see you again tomorrow.